are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, January 14th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, tonight is the final debate before the Iowa caucuses, the Sanders-Warren truce burns. Meanwhile, Republican senators reject an immediate dismissal of impeachment articles as purple state Republican senators face a barrage. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi calls a Wednesday vote to forward those same impeachment articles as Lev Parnas, Giuliani associate, claims to have crucial impeachment info. Speaking of which, New York Times claims that the Russians have hacked Burisma, ostensibly looking for information on Hunter Biden. Ugh. Trump to divert another $7 billion in Pentagon fundings to his wall. Meanwhile, his Labor Department frees up corporations to screw their employees at arm's length. Department of Homeland Security lists environmental activists on par with mass killers. And, a little coincidence, scientists now report that the oceans are now warming at a rate of 5 Hiroshima bombs dropped every second.
Cool, like a big giant hot tub.
Exactly. No more polar swimming, I guess, or whatever, the polar club.
The polar bears are an endangered species.
Polar bears. Republican Wisconsin judge holds an election commission in contempt for not immediately purging 230,000 voters from Wisconsin's voting rolls. Lastly, Seattle strikes back corporate funding. All this and more on today's program. There's a couple of stories I want to get to early, but before we do, we were intending to do an interview today. We did, as you know, if you listened to the program yesterday, we did one on an oral history of Guantanamo Bay. It's disturbing, but I would recommend that you listen to that if you did not check it out. Very important context. People talk about the Iraq war era that we are in many respects still in. And frankly, we're still in the Guantanamo Bay era, but people don't talk about it anymore. Just to give you a sense, on Thursday, got an extended interview with a person who did who embedded themselves at Success Academy, a charter school. And we had a rather spicy back and forth, because while some of the things that they found at the charter school was reinforced sort of, I think, some things that those of us who are critical of charter movement say, there was a broader argument that we had. And the point being that there is obviously some, you know, this program is founded on counter programming on some level. But something happened last night in the 2020 presidential race that became quite a big story, particularly online. But I think in the context of this race, we're 3 weeks out from Iowa. The final debate is tonight. It's something that I think probably has the potential to, I'll just quote Tim Pool, this has the potential to end the Bernie Sanders run. A lot of people on Twitter are used to hearing this kind of rhetoric, but if the media or enemies of Sanders latch on to this thing, it will be devastating. Normal people would be shocked by this kind of talk. And what is Tim Pool talking about? Well, I think you probably know. James O'Keefe, as part of his Exposed 2020 series, has a devastating video of a field organizer whose name is Kyle, who works for the Sanders campaign. And you're not going to believe the info this guy dishes at some bar somewhere, because Kyle's, you know, busy, but not that busy that he can't go out and, you know,
go to a dive bar.
Exactly. And so here is the this video. Folks, this is going to be shocking when you hear what this man has to say. But it's important that we play, because Tim Pool has told us how huge this could be.
Be ready to be in Milwaukee for the DNC convention. We're going to make 1978 look like a Girl Scout hookup. The cops are going to be the ones that are getting beaten.
Why are they beeping all of this?
Because he's saying effing.
Well, I know, but I mean, we're adults, aren't we?
Speak for yourself.
It's the news value.
Speak for yourself, man. I mean, that's, it's too shocking for people to hear the F word in a bar. Somebody getting toasted and vaping, man.
For the DNC convention. We're going to make 1978 look like a Girl Scout hookup. The cops are going to be the ones that are getting beaten in Milwaukee.
Stay tuned. 12 p.m. Eastern, 1-14-20. All right, well, I mean, do we have more? I mean, this is huge. First of all, I don't know if any of you remember what happened at the 1978 DNC convention. It was a disaster. First off, attendance was incredibly low because it was an off year, election year. There was no nominating process. There was no primaries. There was, in fact, it was so bad, they canceled the 1978 DNC. They couldn't even have a convention.
Or maybe they've just erased it from history.
Or maybe we don't even talk about it so much because it was so ugly. You understand, Kyle here with the Sanders campaign, one of their top strategists.
I thought it was Matt Duss at first.
Yeah. This guy, he's the only one who has the information about the 78 convention. And that's why he's so high placed in the Sanders campaign. But let's play another clip. Folks, this is... Look, we played the earlier Veritas clip where Kyle, a field organizer in the Sanders campaign, had talked about what was going to happen at the DNC this year. Sanders is not nominated. It's going to look like 1978, which means that they're going to like literally change time and erase the convention. Here is another clip from this devastating, devastating secret recording of Kyle, the field coordinator. And he really gives up the ghost. A lot of people talk about free college and they're like, why would Bernie Sanders want to do this? Why would you offer free college to people? It's just a bizarre concept. Why wouldn't you want people to have student debt? Well, loose lips sink ships, and Kyle, the field organizer, a field organizer for Bernie Sanders, in the bar, told a secret agent from Project Veritas. Careful, a lot of language here, folks.
Do you even think that some of these like MAGA people could even be re-educated?
I mean, we got to try. I mean, like, so, like,
pause it for 1 second. I just want to, like, the idea when the secret underground reporter says, do you think it's even possible, like, these MAGA people to be re-educated? That sick laugh that Kyle has in response to that, as if he thinks that's funny. Like it's some type of joke. God, what kind of evil lurks in the heart of Kyle? Go back to the beginning.
MAGA people could even be re-educated.
I mean, we gotta try. I mean, like, so, like, in Nazi Germany, after the fall of the Nazi Party, there was a shit ton of the populace that was f***ing Nazified. I mean, like, Germany had to spend billions of dollars re-educating f***ing people to not be Nazis. Like,
horrible.
We're probably gonna have to do the same f***ing thing here. And that's kind of what Bernie's like, whole f***ing, like, hey, free education for everybody, because we're gonna have to teach you not to be a f***ing Nazi.
Teach people to not be Nazis? What kind of world is this?
That's we fascism. Would. That's literally fascism.
That we would provide educational opportunities for people so that they won't be Nazis anymore. What kind of disgusting. Kyle, how could you?
Really dystopian stuff.
I don't know what is worse, the idea that Kyle would be so loose-lipped to give away the game plan to have less Nazis in America, or just the idea that we would have less Nazis in America. That's not what America's about!
Yeah, that's not reaching across the aisle.
God. If the media gets wind of this, now it's probably...
They're probably swarming Milwaukee right now.
It just occurs to me how we've just blown it by spreading more of this.
Kyle.
Kyle. God, man. Denazification? What kind of world do you live in? Damn. We've got other stuff, more serious stuff to get to in a moment, but...
As if that wasn't serious. I mean, come on.
Oh, my God. It is that time of year, folks. That time of, like, well, that's that, it's that, I'm sorry, it's that time of era, I should say. Hey, did you know that Honey is the free online shopping tool that automatically finds the best promo codes and applies them to your cart? Folks, this is, I know I have a reputation of being a little bit of a penny pincher, but are you really pinching pennies when it's this easy? No, you're just being smart. Saving with Honey feels even better than great. It feels like boarding a plane and realizing you have an entire row to yourself. You don't have to do anything. It's just there. Or... it's like finishing up your podcast episode right as you walk into work. Like I walk in today, we were already talking about this. How many years away are we from just, you know, Brendan inputs all of the past episodes I've done. There's a program that will just generate what I should be saying based upon the stories that are inputted. The 3D hologram is here. Boom. How awesome would that be?
Pretty good.
That'd be pretty good. In the meantime, you got Honey. Honey has found over 18 million members, over $2 billion in savings. And if you're not Michael Bloomberg, that's a lot of money. Plus, Honey supports over 30,000 stores online, including Macy's, Target, Sephora, Best Buy, more. They're adding more stores every day. You know users love Honey since it's over 100,000 five-star reviews on the Google Chrome store. This is awesome. Like, I used to, back in the day... I taught my daughter, whenever you're buying something, you got to go, before you go to the checkout, you got to go and search for 20 minutes to look for a coupon code. And now all the stores, they make it a little harder to find. They got to send it to you directly. Much more tricky. With Honey now, I've shown Milo, like, here's what you do. Nothing. It happens automatically. It's beautiful. Using Honey feels pretty great. Think of it as a little daily victory. Plus, it's free and installs in just a few seconds. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/majority. That's joinhoney.com/majority. Check it out, folks. You're going to be happy you did. And, of course, it is supportive of this program. So Then I should remind you, this program does rely on your support. You can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. And when you do, we give you the free show without commercials, and we give you extra content. Also, don't forget, check out the AM Quickie. We are a couple days away from sort of giving you an ironclad guarantee that the thing gets out the door early, 8 a.m., 5 minutes, all the headlines from a left and somewhat snarky perspective that you need, amquickie.com, or get it through the app. All right. So let's talk about this. We'll get to impeachment. I got two big things I want to talk about today. Well, let me just, before we get to the Warren Sanders kerfuffle.
The title card?
The title card, as it were. Two stories that I think are super important to keep in mind. Well, are not necessarily, the stories in and of themselves are not, they are super important. But they also, I think, sort of like provide the foundation of what we're going to talk about later. One is just a ruling. It's just, you know, it's a casual thing. Nobody will talk about it. You won't hear about it on the cable news. Nobody else, no other podcast will talk about this. Maybe a labor one will. There were two rulings during the Obama administration that had big implications for low-wage workers. One came from the National Labor Relations Board. The other one came from the Labor Department. They were they sort of ran in parallel. And that is, when you are the employee of a franchise, you work in a McDonald's in Davenport, Iowa. I don't know that there's a McDonald's there, but I guess there might be. And you're working at the McDonald's, and you try and unionize. And the manager fires you because you try and unionize or something like that. Because of the relationship between McDonald's HQ and this franchise that is owned by somebody else, McDonald's says you can only offer these products. They can only be offered at this time of the year. You're going to do the Shamrock Shake. You cannot do this. You cannot freelance this. You're in direct control of us. We're in direct control of you. You get to keep the profits. You operate it, but you cannot, you have certain parameters as to like what kind of managerial structure you have. You have certain parameters about what foods you offer. You have certain parameters of what the restaurant needs to look like and the way that you set up the seating and all this. And you have certain policies about the way that we run things. That McDonald's is liable for the actions of that store. Because there's a lot of evidence that there's a corporate directives about this stuff, because they're afraid, as rightly they should be, if Davenport, Iowa has these type of working conditions, people are going to expect them over in Columbus, Ohio, and in New York City, and wherever it is. So the National Labor Relations Board said that when you have this type of relationship with a franchisee, you are on the hook. And the Labor Department also said that you are on the hook. National Labor Relations Board has implications for collective bargaining and limits legal, the responsibilities in terms of wages and hours, like, oh, you're not letting people do overtime, that type of stuff. That's the National Labor Relations Board. The Labor Department is about bundling these claims from different McDonald's, as it were. It could be any of these franchisees. And the Trump Labor Department just changed the rule. National Labor Relations Board did. And the Labor Department did as well. Reverse stuff that happened during the Obama administration. This stuff is going to have massive implications for literally hundreds of thousands of workers across the country. Nobody's going to talk about it. All the things that you could say about and Barack Obama, which I agree with, still significantly better for workers than Donald Trump. Necessary, but insufficient, but better. That's hugely important to keep in mind. Exhibit B, in terms of what's important to keep in mind when we talk about these other things. We talk about infighting amongst those left of center in the Democratic primary, within the Democratic primary field. This story. A Republican-appointed judge in Wisconsin, and we've talked about this, basically ruled that it was okay, or rather that there should be 230,000 Wisconsin voters purged from the election rolls before 2020. And the election commission is made up of three Democrats and three Republicans. The three Democrats have said, we're not doing it. We're waiting for the appeal. Voting's too important. And they're getting charged now $50 a day and $250 a day each, these individuals. There should be a GoFundMe set up for these people, frankly. And one of the election commission members said she believes that the judge's initial findings were incorrect and she doesn't want to begin taking people off the rolls, even though she's been found in contempt of court. If we're going to treat voting as the central component of our democracy, we need to be far less cavalier about taking people off the rolls. At issue, and this is according to the Wisconsin Sentinel, I think it is. Milwaukee Sentinel, I'm not sure. We just find out what this is. Judge finds Wisconsin elections commissions in contempt of court, orders them to quickly remove people from the rolls. Somehow it didn't print out for me. I think it's the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. At issue is the status of more than 200,000 people. Wisconsin, obviously a key state in this election. Hillary Clinton lost that state by about 22,000 votes. Voters can re-register, but of course they have no idea if they've been taken off the rolls. What happened was in October, 2 or 3 months ago, the Elections Commission sent out letters to 230,000 people it believed may have moved and asked them to update their voter registrations or confirm they were at the same address. Now, I don't know about you, how closely you look at every piece of mail that you get sent that doesn't look like it's a bill or a check.
I open about 1% of my mail.
And same. You got two kids with you. You gotta feed them. You got to go to bed. You got to work hard, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's a myriad of reasons why you wouldn't send this back to confirm your address. Seriously? Or maybe you haven't had it forwarded to you. And the idea that you moved like across the street, a different apartment or down the house or whatever it is. And ultimately, like, what difference does it make if out of those 230,000 people, 170,000 have moved out of state? But you can salvage the voting rights of 50,000 of those people. What possible difference did it make to the integrity of the election? It's just the integrity of the voter rolls. And it's not even the integrity. It's just like, how efficient are they? This is just like the difference between I've got all my files on my desktop, on my computer, and I know I should probably have them in my documents folder. So the elections commissioner planned to remove them from the rolls in 2021 if they didn't act. So therefore, like, if you come and vote and you see that there's some type of disparity, you can fix your address. And if you don't come and vote, then it's an indication that maybe you have left the state. We'll wait till 2021 after these elections in 2020. Republican group went in front of that judge and said the state has to remove them from the rolls now. Now, before any of these elections, so that there is no other warning to these people that your registration may or may not be in jeopardy, other than that little card that got sent once in October. The judge agreed, ordered the voters purged immediately. The Supreme Court of Wisconsin, which, as you know, is controlled by Republicans because people couldn't engage on the importance of the Supreme Court in Wisconsin. And Democrats lost that election. I think it was in 2018, in the run-up to 2018, or maybe after. I can't remember. The Supreme Court decided not to get involved only because one of the judges had recused themselves because they're up for re-election in the fall. So it's now going to go down to an appellate court, which is probably going to be more favorable to the idea that people shouldn't be kicked off the voter rolls. And so these Democratic Elections Commission people are basically holding out for that because they know when you purge people, it's much harder to unpurge. And if the Supreme Court eventually does weigh in, they're going to do so probably after they're not going to be able to do it until after the 2020 election, when you will get a whole nother updated set of data as to whether these people are around and where they're living. But this stuff is, in many respects, so much more important than what we're going to be talking about in terms of what's going on within the primary.
Yeah, what's the justification for this? Like, we all know why they're doing it, really, but like, what's the alleged harm that would come from letting people vote who've changed their address recently?
It's not even that, because they're not even making that case. They're just making that the registration rolls may be inaccurate. When you come in, they're going to ask you if your address is correct. And then maybe they'll give you a provisional ballot. Or maybe you come in for the primary and you find out that you're not registered and you can vote in the general. There's a whole host of that. Their only argument is that if you have, and this has always been the Republican argument, this is why they say, like, we can't have dead people registered on the voting rolls, because presumably there's a whole squad of people out there who are like waiting for people to die. It's like Paper Moon or something.
Death Squad.
Exactly. And they're going around going like, oh, huh, I see. Francine died at age 96. We just got to, you know, we'll get Betty, who's 96, who we've got on ice, you know, waiting to come in to pretend like she's Francine so she can vote both as Francine and Betty. We just got to transport her. I mean, like, it's absurd. But it is because, as the head of the Republican Party in Wisconsin said, like, this is the way we do it. We suppress votes. And this stuff is so much more important. Well, it's not so much more important, but it's important to keep in mind in the context of this election. Like, the difference between Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren in terms of them being president is going to have huge implications for things like labor laws, like corporate power, like the judicial branch of government. Not going to affect the state necessarily, but in terms of like priorities that are demanded of Congress. That is just the fact. And before we get into this with Bernie and Warren, too, I also want to say, like, if you are enamored with a politician, you are a sucker. There is no politician who will not disappoint you. I don't care who it is. You're a sucker. The idea is you look at their actions. You determine which politician is going to be the best vehicle to get the results that you want. That is always how you should look at this. And
where their power and support comes from.
Which is exactly part of that as well. Indeed. What are the forces that they are subject to? What are they going to respond to? What do they respond to? Et cetera, et cetera. That will give you a good sense of where they're going. They, you know, it's best to look at a politician as a sail on a sailboat. And you get a sense of like, they are, they have set up their sails so that if a wind comes from this direction, that's what's going to move them forward. Vice versa. If there's no wind that's coming from that direction, they're going to be inert. So, you know the story, I suspect, at this point. Yesterday, a story came out in Politico saying that four people were recounting a private conversation that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders had. So, ostensibly heard it from Elizabeth Warren, saying that Bernie did not think a woman could win the presidency. That was all that we were told, because, of course, this was secondhand information. These were anonymous sources. Later that day, about 8 hours later, Elizabeth Warren released a statement. Bernie and I met for more than 2 hours in December of 2018 to discuss the 2020 election, our past work together, and our shared goals: beating Donald Trump, taking back our government from the wealthy and well-connected, and building an economy that works for everyone. Among the topics that came up was what would happen if Democrats nominated a female candidate. I thought a woman could win. He disagreed. I have no interest in discussing this private meeting any further because Bernie and I have far more in common than our differences on punditry. I'm in this race to talk about what's broken in this country and how to fix it. And that's what I'm going to do. I know Bernie is in the race for the same reason. We have been friends and allies in this fight for a long time. I have no doubt we will continue to work together to defeat Donald Trump and put our government on the side of the people. Now, before I comment on this, let me just say that this story in CNN broke in the wake of the story of a canvasser who was using an unauthorized script in trying to approach Warren voters by saying that Sanders' base is more uneducated, more working class than Elizabeth Warren's. Warren's highly educated, wealthier. And therefore, Bernie is going to be able to drive more voters out. That was taken as some as being a knock on Elizabeth Warren's supporters as being the elite. It was
taken by Warren as trashing her.
It was taken by Warren as trashing her. I find it hard to believe that she seriously took it that way, but it was consistent with her attempts recently. Keep the statement up there. Her attempts recently to brand herself as the unifier. Now, look, I don't know from a technical standpoint, to be honest with you, who would be a better president than Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. I think Elizabeth Warren has incredible policy chops. I think she has great chops in the inside game of Washington. But there's also an outside game, or rather even a wholesale politics game. And the trashing thing, taking that as a way of creating the unifier, I think that was probably not horrible, politically speaking. I'm not saying morally or this and that. This race is so far from being as vicious as the 2008 primary. It's not even close. So I want to make that clear. And Bernie and Elizabeth, they're big people. They can take care of themselves. Hurt feelings, blah, blah, blah. All my analysis is whether Elizabeth Warren can win the primary or win the general election and then govern effectively. And I have, you know, sort of hinted at this in the past, but I don't know who her advisors are. I do know who some of them are. And they are doing a crappy job. And frankly, that statement. Now, this isn't a question of like, should she have lied for Bernie? I don't know what Bernie said. But if Bernie said, when she says, I think a woman could win, he says, I don't know. I don't know if a woman could win in this environment. Or if he had said, I don't think a woman is going to beat Donald Trump because of the misogyny in this country.
Or if he said, listen here, Pocahontas.
Well, I mean, look.
You are a woman and a person of color. I will never let you be president.
Yeah, there is. I don't know what he said. And like I said on Twitter, I have had multiple exchanges and been on email lists with women in particular who are most sensitive to this topic. And by sensitive, I mean most afraid that a woman could not beat Donald Trump. Now, I happen to think that a woman could beat Donald Trump. I think there was a lot of other baggage that Hillary Clinton had. And like I said yesterday, before this statement, there's no doubt in my mind that there is a number. I don't know what that number is. In Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania in particular, frankly, but other states as well, that misogyny created a deficit for Hillary Clinton. There's no doubt in my mind. I don't know if... And I do think there are other, 12 other reasons why Hillary Clinton ran. But there's no doubt in my mind that misogyny is. I don't think that deficit is enough to preclude a strong candidate who is a woman from winning. Someone who is good with politics. But what I have come to believe about what's going on with Warren's campaign. And I said this yesterday as well. I don't know if my family from my mother's side was Hungarian or Polish now, because there's some confusion. I've been growing up thinking it was Hungarian, but if someone told me tomorrow that's Polish, it could be Polish. I don't begrudge Elizabeth Warren anything about the fact that she thought she had Native American ancestry. I don't think she ever used that to her benefit. I think she just believed it. But the DNA testing was stupid. It was a stupid political thing to do. It was answering Donald Trump. And the fact is, she is an incredibly accomplished, intelligent person who should not be answering the dumb taunts of Donald Trump. It showed a defensiveness that I thought was problematic. When we got past that, which I think we did, to be honest with you, we saw this with her Medicare for All rollout. She did not have to present those programs in the way that she did with such detail, but felt defensive because she was getting attacked for it. I think that had she stood her ground on the cost versus taxes difference, she would have continued her ascent as she had. But instead, she created controversy around her policy. I don't happen to be as critical of her policy as others. I think it's hard for me to imagine that Medicare for All is going to pass in one vote or two votes, frankly. I think that the mistake is to pre-negotiate against yourself and deliver more detail than you have to.
Yeah, the DNA test thing really kind of made me feel for her, actually. Like, it reminded me of, like, being a little kid who got picked on a lot and thought, oh, if I could only prove empirically to these people that I'm not Jamie Pixernose, then they'll stop bullying me. But bullies don't care.
Exactly. And the thing is, she doesn't have to do that. And then this is a huge political miscalculation in my mind. The campaign has spent the past 3 weeks to make the argument that I am the unifying candidate. And she goes out there and drops a statement that is not unifying. I mean, we saw that. We saw the statement. You can't pretend that it's not, that it's, so she undercuts her I'm a unifier statement, which they had been working on, which I think was actually probably not a bad thing to work on. One of the problems I think that the Warren campaign has had is that she started out, and many people did, thinking that she was going to be the compromise candidate, and that's fine. But you don't become the compromise candidate by becoming the compromise candidate. You become the compromise candidate by, because she was never going to get to the left of Bernie, you know, maybe on some things here and there, but not broadly speaking, right? I mean, she came out for the government to produce generic drugs. She was never going to be to the right of Joe Biden. You know, 2 + 2 = 4. I don't need to tell you that. I can just say 2 + 2. But if I'm pushing 4 into your face, you're going to start to think like, wait a second, I'm not an idiot. You've just outlined to me what the problem is. I can figure out the solution when you lay it out like that. But they ran towards that as a strategy, as opposed to running towards her strength, which is her proposals, her intelligence, her awareness. You know, there was so much that was just pre-digested, not trusting the electorate to figure this out. When she comes out and drops a bomb 2 or 3 weeks before Iowa, all it's doing is undercutting her role as a unifier. And I will say something else as well. Like I say, I don't care about like the personal relationship between them. These are politicians. As far as I'm concerned, there is no personal relationship. It doesn't matter. Personal relationships are more problematic than not. The point is, if you are allies from a political standpoint, and they can still be allies from a political standpoint, but if you are going out there and trying to sell yourself as a candidate that has integrity and you can be trusted, like every candidate should be when running against Donald Trump, to reveal something in a private conversation that you reiterate in yourself was in that statement is a private conversation, you have a problem.
People do not like snitches.
And not when it's like, supposedly you're talking about like, here's my good friend. We had a private conversation, but here's one tidbit about it. And I'm not even going to characterize it in a way that he could defend himself. I'm just going to say he disagreed. It's completely open-ended. We don't know what that means.
No one likes a tattletale.
People have said, like, should she have lied for Bernie Sanders? I think she should have done what was the most effective thing for her to do as a politician. And subsequent to this, she told Ryan Grimm, and I heard this and through other, you know, through chit chat as well, that this whole thing was not intentional. That there were 4 people who had the story who leaked it. She probably told people contemporaneously at the time, which I, you know, everybody can understand. I mean, you know, you relate the private conversation, you know, privately. You don't go out publicly and talk about it. You tell your friends. That happens. The friends got, you know, supposedly the friends got, you know, agitated by, you know, the talking points from the field coordinator the other day. And so they went out and they went to the press and they talked about it. Well, here's the problem. They had 8 hours from the time that article was released to her releasing her statement. You cannot say this was all unintentional after you have spent a year marketing yourself as having a plan for that. Doing something and dropping this bomb in an unintentional manner cuts against the very core, core brand proposition of having a plan. And I just think that this is, I am really, frankly, I'm just concerned that it shows a problem in the political shop at the Warren campaign, and it scares me, frankly. It scares me as to, I mean, I think, you know, what would happen in the general. And I guess more relevantly, I think it's going to scare other people. I think it is such a muddled message that she is sending. Other than that Bernie thinks that a woman can't win, there's a lot of other things behind that. And I don't know how many people she thinks are going to leave Bernie because of that, or if she thinks it's going to activate people who are, you know, sort of like former Clinton supporters.
Sympathy votes. I mean, there are a lot of people who empathized with Hillary Clinton and projected the sexism they'd experienced in their own lives onto her. And I feel like that might be what Warren is going for here.
I think that's probably true. I mean, he's Nate Silver saying, wait, there are people who don't think the Warren campaign leaked the story. I mean, he's just happy to see Warren and Bernie fight. But the problem, what you're talking about, which I think is probably what was involved in this. Like, I think it took 8 hours to release a statement because there was probably some questions on the campaign, like what we should do. And it seems to me like her advisors said, this is the way you're running a campaign. You must take advantage of this right here. And I would be very surprised if that's not what happened. But it shows a lack of political judgment to listen to those idiots. And because all she is doing is centering a fear that I can assure you, I don't know what the number is. Maybe it's 10%. Maybe it's 70% of the people and the women who support Elizabeth Warren or would support Elizabeth Warren. All she is doing is centering that fear. All we're going to talk about now, tonight at the debate, there's going to be a question or two about it. And maybe they let it die because I get the sense that the Warren campaign realized maybe it was a mistake. But to have everybody tune in to the Iowa debate tonight, weeks before Iowa, and have 5 minutes, 10 minutes, who knows how long it's going to be, to talk about the issue of whether a woman can win in this era when we have an incredibly misogynistic president who is giving license to the already, I think, widespread misogyny we have in this country. Somebody asked me last night, I was in an exchange with somebody offline, do you think that the country is going to reject a Jew quicker than they would reject a woman? And my answer is no. I think that misogyny is so comfortable for a huge amount of people in this country to act upon, that it is such a part of their daily lives that they, you know, I think that is a more salient concern. But even if that wasn't the case, the fear in the wake of the Clinton loss that people have about how misogyny impacts the presidency, why would you want your supporters to have that in the front of their mind as you go into the primary? Like, if they support you, they have already answered that question. If they don't support you, they have probably wrestled on some, but are open to supporting you. They have probably wrestled with that question. Why would you want to center that? Like, who are these people who are working on this campaign? This would literally be like if Hillary Clinton had said, like, well, I got to tell you, I had a conversation with Bernie 2 years ago. And I said, do you think it would be a problem if I went and took $750,000 from Goldman Sachs? And he said no. Well, we don't know if Bernie said, well, if you're going to take 500,000, you might as well take 750. We don't know if he said that. But regardless, like, why would you bring that back up? Why would you bring that up? Like, you know, this thing that people have been talking about?
Well, also, if Hillary were trying this tactic, though, she would have gone in for the kill. Like, even that statement makes Warren look kind of weak because she's doing half measures. She's like, Bernie's my friend, and it's really not important, but he totally is lying, and he totally said this. But we're still really good friends. Like,
well, but the thing
that is a half measure, and it makes you look kind of disingenuous.
She's not saying that he lied, because I don't know when he said that he's not come out and said publicly that he didn't disagree or whatever. I mean, his campaign manager came out and said that the stories in the CNN are not true, but they're not going to respond to this, I don't think, and nor should they. I think they have Biden in their sights, and they're going to stick with that plan. But this is just indicative, I think, of a political problem. And, you know, I think she is by far a better choice on policy grounds.
It's very disappointing.
Than any other Democrat. But, any other Democrat besides Bernie. I mean, I think, but I think that, like, I am seriously worried about how they're running this campaign.
Yeah, you'd want to think, like, the sort of software that AOC and Bernie and Ilhan sort of represent could be used by a Democrat. And Warren seems like the best one to run that software. And then you get all this. Yeah, this
is where it ends up. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, everyone got mad at me for saying this, but it is true. Without a lot of progressive Democrats to choose from, she still is one of the better Democrats. And as such, I don't want her to be this bad at politics.
I don't know that there's a better Democrat after.
Oh, there's better Democrats.
In the Senate?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. And I would say, you know, I don't know why they didn't just let Warren run without having to, you know, to get this clever, because it's not working. And I don't think this is going to work. Now, I may be wrong. There may be some surge now. But I think I suspect that this is going to hurt her campaign. And if there is really any major impact, it could help Biden. But hopefully tonight, we'll see a different tact and she will go after Biden. I think having two people to the left of Joe Biden at all in this race, particularly at this point, is very helpful for those of us who want as left a presidency as possible. And, I just don't want. I'm just shocked by it.
No malarkey. This is a no malarkey zone.
No malarkey. All right. Put this up. First of all, here, Joe Biden said Hillary Clinton faced sexism, but that's not going to happen with me. He said that a couple of weeks ago. Somebody on Twitter was like, "How come you if anybody else said this, you would roast them?" Now, this is, first of all, it will not happen to him. He will not, if he runs, he will not. Now, but do I think that's a smart thing to say? No, you got to be an idiot to say that in public.
Oh, but his campaign has clarified that he wasn't implying women are less electable than men.
Right. There you go. But my point is like the idea that this was exchanged in private, I would be, to be honest with you, I would be shocked if, anybody who knows politics, at the very least, did not contemplate the idea that this country is broadly misogynistic enough, and particularly against Donald Trump, if that is, I don't know, impossible, very difficult, odds are against it, whatnot. Now, I don't happen to agree with that, but I don't think that's an irrational thing or in any way a misogynistic one. Here is Bernie Sanders in what, let's play this one in the bottom here. This one's, when was this from? 1988. Okay. Ronald Reagan has just been president for two terms. Here is Bernie Sanders with a bunch of school kids.
Oh my God. I love it when he talks to school kids.
87 in Vermont.
87 in Vermont.
Have there ever been a woman there?
Not in Burlington. There have been, and there are women mayors all over the country. There's a woman governor in the state. Who can tell me the name of our governor? Yeah?
I think it's
Madeline Cunin. Madeline Cunin. And Governor Cunin is a woman. And there are other, not a whole lot, I think there's one other woman governor. There are the mayor of San Francisco. Is a woman, and there are many women mayors, but not enough. And one of the very important things, and I hope that all the girls in this class understand, that you, just as much as the boys, have a right to become president. There's not been a woman president, although there was a woman who was giving thought to running for president this time, a from Colorado, a woman named Representative Schroeder gave some thought. So I hope that the girls will think that they have the right to be involved in politics quite as much as the boys do. It's beginning to change, but it's not changing fast enough.
It's very cute. I think those were probably 8-year-olds, maybe. I don't know. Sort of looks like to me. You know, the language he uses, I don't think, with the level of sort of like sensitivity we have now, I would also say, and the boys, I hope you boys realize that too. But in 1988, I can tell you folks that it was like, you know, Pat Schroeder cried on television. And that's what drove her out of the race. That's why I think there's like a, the level of misogyny is high. Here is Bernie Sanders. This is in 85. When was this? 87. This is 87 too?
This one's 88.
The real issue is not whether you're black or white, whether you're a woman or a man. In my view, a woman could be elected president of the United States. The real issue is, whose side are you on? Are you on the side of workers and poor people, or are you on the side of big money and the corporations?
Now, some people will see that and say, there's a myopia there. He's not contemplating this. And I think... certainly, Sanders looks through a lens of politics that is more class-based than anyone else in the field. But,
well, also, he's implying that being in favor of working-class interests is necessarily a winning quality. Which...
well, he's talking about that, yeah. And but there are others who would say, well, you need to have a, and this is 20 or 30 years ago. And I think he has gotten a little bit more, I think his view on that has probably widened. But the point is that he clearly does not believe that, first of all, generically, a woman couldn't or shouldn't be president. That is, quite obvious. Now, you can say like, and this again, we don't know what he said. But I'm just going to imagine the worst for the sake of the argument. And the worst is that his assessment of the political situation in the country is that Donald Trump has driven up misogyny so much that a woman would have a very difficult time winning or couldn't win. However, we don't know. But that assessment, again, is one that I have heard articulated by women in the center and in the center left.
In acknowledging
and
that.
And men. But women, I've heard it from, frankly, more than men.
To not acknowledge the misogyny drag effect in talking with like Clinton supporters would be evidence in certain conversations of misogyny.
Yeah, it's more sexist to pretend sexism isn't real.
But aside from that, let's also keep in mind, this is a private conversation that he assumed was private. This is not Bernie Sanders going on the campaign trail and weaponizing that belief that exists, not just amongst, I would imagine, supporters of every single candidate. Well, he is not going out and weaponizing that.
The Warren campaign has done that for him now.
Well, like, look at this Biden thing. We read this as like, oh, it's a statement of fact. It is, but it's also an attack on Warren.
Of course, it's Joe Biden putting it out there. It's putting out there. This
is the way with it.
This is what it looks like when you want to weaponize it. Now, he walked it back immediately, but it's out there. Try not to think of an elephant, right? I mean, it's out there now. Biden says, don't forget about sexism. That's why I'm electable. Bernie Sanders never said that. He never used it as a campaign tool. But you're right, Jamie. Elizabeth Warren just did it.
Like, that's the bitter irony of this whole thing. Like, the Bernie Sanders campaign never would have done that.
No. And part of that is, and it's not because he's a nice guy or, you know, the campaign people are nice people. It's just because it would have been stupid politics. For the people that he has to appeal for and that he's going to represent, it would be stupid politics. Maybe the other stuff is true or maybe it isn't. I don't know. But that's the bottom line. All right.
I'm still thinking back to when Hillary implied that somebody might murder Barack Obama. Remember that?
I think that's an overstatement, but I think it was poor language. She said she was staying in the race because to California because remember what happened.
That was an anxiety for a lot of people, actually, also.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And frankly, I'm not convinced that wasn't a sort of like, you know, maybe trying to get that out there in the same way. I don't know. But yes. And I would just say, lastly, let's put this in terms of whether it's rational to even contemplate this. Here's Emily's list from when did they put this up? On the Emily's List campaign site, they shared an NBC News article from when was it from? Yeah, just put up. What was the date on that? Yeah, okay. So from April of this year. And they link to it. And here it is. Can a woman beat Trump? Some Democrats wonder if it's worth the risk. That's the you know, like, I show that because it is a real concern, so much so that Emily's List felt that they had to push back on it. I don't know if they're even pushing back on it. They're just linking to that piece. And that piece basically comes out with, like, you know, some people wonder. This is Emily's List. It's an organization that funds exclusively women. And basically, this is Elizabeth Warren raising the question again. Like, this question should be put to bed, should have been put to bed. If I'm Elizabeth Warren, if I'm any woman running for president, I want this question to be resolved in April of 2019. I don't want it to come up in, you know, January 25th of 2019 when I'm a week away from the Iowa campaign. And that to me is just like, this is, it's a clown show. It's a clown show.
Sad.
All right. I've said my piece on it. I'm bummed about it.
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the debates later tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be annoying.
My prediction is I think she'll probably not lean in too heavily about
it. I don't think she's going to lean into it either, frankly.
Bernie should just say, I was reading Emily's List.
All right, here's the, this is an interesting development. So there is now a story out there that at least four Republican senators, one of them might be Mitt Romney, are expected to defect on the question of voting to call witnesses in Trump's impeachment trial. Murkowski, Susan Collins of Maine, Mitt Romney, possibly Cory Gardner, possibly Rand Paul, possibly Senator Lamarie Alexander. There may be more if these people break. It's unclear. But this is an example of what I've been saying about the pressure put on Republican senators. Now, I think this is small bore stuff, but that's what is going on right now. Let's play this ad that the Lincoln, what is it, the Lincoln Group? The Lincoln Project. Now, let me just say, the Lincoln Project is a group of never-Trumper Republicans who think that there is still an iota or shred of dignity in the Republican Party. They are mistaken, but I will take their ads. The group is Conway, who I guess is doing this basically out of spite for his against his ex-wife, soon to be ex-wife. I can appreciate that. But also the barista, Steve Schmidt, is behind this group as well. He was the one who worked for Schultz. He can cry in his money about that.
Protect your neck, Steve.
Exactly. And but here is the ad, and I predict, as I predicted months ago, that this is what you're going to see from opponents come November of Cory Gardner, Tom Tillis, Susan Collins, Sally McMaster. Is that her name? Did I get that right? In Arizona, I know I always say Sally McAdams. I think it's Sally McMaster. Martha McSally. Son of a
Martha Marcy May Marlene.
I gotta put a sign on my thing. And also Joni Ernst. These are the ads you're going to see. And so they're going to be worried about their vote. And then they're going to be worried about their other vote. And Chuck Schumer is going to try and make them vote for as many things to protect Donald Trump as possible, so that you will see ads like this in the fall.
Hey, Cory Gardner, ask yourself, why are you losing? Why do the polls show you headed for humiliating defeat in November? Because Colorado trusted you to work for us, not Donald Trump.
Sides have been chosen, and Gardner is in lockstep with the party at this point. Gardner's in a box.
Tough people built our great state, and they've always fought for what's right. The only thing you'll fight for is Trump. You're just another Trump servant. Weak, frightened, impotent. A small man terrified of a political bully.
And we'll be in Colorado a lot, actually. We have a great senator in Colorado. We have to get him extended. I'll be there a lot.
So scared of his tweets, you'll do anything Trump orders. Blocking witnesses, stonewalling to keep Trump's corruption secret. Breaking your oath to follow the Constitution and the law. Putting Trump over Colorado every time. On health care, our environment, and honesty. Colorado voters want a fair trial in the Senate and honest leadership. Either do your job or Colorado will find someone who will.
I mean, that's pretty tough, but true.
They called impotent. Him impotent.
Yeah.
Damn.
Right?
Roasted. I mean,
that's what they're going to get. That's what they're going to get. I don't know what they're going to say about Susan Collins and Joni Ernst, like infertile, or I don't. But yeah, it doesn't quite work in the exact same way. But the idea being, you're just a puppet for Donald Trump, and voted to no witnesses, voted to, automatic vote to find, you know, Donald Trump innocent of all lying, right? Like, do you really think Donald Trump's not a liar? Susan Collins believes that. Like, you know, this is, and it's all going to be centered around this vote, and they're not going to be able to escape because of this vote, and that's what we shall see. I don't know that doesn't guarantee a win, but if a win comes, it's going to be a big part of that. All right, we're going to take a quick break, headed to the fun half. Went long again. I don't know what to tell you, folks. There's a lot of news going on. I'm not getting any sleep. I got to figure out some way of getting sleep. And so,
you really do.
I
God.
Do. It's, I mean, like, I, it's, I woke up Saul last night. Going off on somebody on the phone about all this stuff.
Well, give him a taste of his own medicine.
Saul? Yeah, no kidding. But the problem is then he's just better at it, waking me up. Folks, a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can support this program by becoming a member. Jointhemajorityreport.com. We probably lost a lot of members today because of my critique of the politics of this situation. But what are you going to do? So you can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, we give you the free show, free of commercials, and extra content every day. Plus, you support all of it. Don't forget also AM Quickie, amquickie.com. Sign up for that. You'll enjoy it. And justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. TMBS on, there's going to be what, a live thing? What?
Check out the most recent episode we did with Matt Chrisman. And David Griscom's doing some live streams in Michael's absence. I think there might be a show this weekend.
Okay, there you go. Jamie?
This week on the Antifada, I speak with the great Leslie Lee III from Struggle Session about the amazing movie Parasite by Bong Joon-ho, the South Korean director, which is out right now. I encourage everybody to see this movie before you listen to the podcast, because this is one situation where you really don't want spoilers. Sometimes I think that people's concern with spoilers is dumb, but this time I don't. See the movie. Listen to the podcast. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Matt.
Patreon.com/literary hangover. We talked about the Sotweed Factor and the Chesapeake sort of tobacco proletariat, and how the Brits looked at them as a bunch of scammers, and we looked at the Brits like a bunch of, you know, hoity-toity, nerds.
So hoity-toity. All right, folks. See you in the fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
That's a good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.